Thank you, Elaine.
Thanks. So it's my turn to talk. Is there an interpreter or does everybody speak English and I can just, should I go slow or fast? I mean, regular. Okay, I'm Elaine, I'm an addict. And it is an honor to speak here to you guys today. And I really appreciate you asking me, Nikolai. I'll start off at the beginning since I have 45 minutes. when I was, you know, I was raised by two people that didn't really drink or have a party and lifestyle. But if I told you about my father, when I've told people about my father, they would say he didn't drink, you know, he didn't do drugs or anything. And no, but he was, you know, an adult child of an alcoholic, as my mother was. So I was raised by two wounded children that were barely adults. You know, I'm the fifth kid out of six. And there was a lot of abuse. There was a lot of verbal abuse, a lot of physical abuse to me personally, my father. And he used to beat up my older sister when she would come home drunk. And I already was getting hit, but you know, the message was, I didn't like alcohol for one thing. Back when I was very young, I didn't smoke. I thought it was awful. I didn't do anything. I was a good girl in ways, but I was very shy. I was very quiet. I was very wounded from my childhood and how my father, especially, but both my parents, how it was. It was a dysfunctional relationship that they had. And there was just a lot of abuse between the happy times. And my parents divorced, and I went up to live with my mother in the city in Philadelphia. And I didn't like it there because I was used to, I'd been with my friends and I was a teenager. I went back to live with my father back where the house that we grew up in. And he was never home. And he would tell me to come home at a certain time and he wasn't there. And that's when I started getting into drugs. And I ran away from home at 16 years old. And I lived with a man, we'll call him a man. He was 27 years old or something. And he was a very bad man. And life was, I lived with him and his brothers and his sister in a house with really no parents. And it was insanity. There was drugs, you know, all the time. He was a drug dealer and I was high all the time. I'm told, you know, I don't remember a lot of my addiction and my, you know, when I would drink because I had blackouts. And I'm told later, you know, about things that I did and how I was. I don't really remember it. I found out later that he tried to drug, you know, a girlfriend of mine, the guy I was living with, and he tried to drug her like hiding it in the joint, heavier drugs. So I think that he was doing that to me. So I was really doing more drugs than I knew I was doing. But I tried to control my addiction when I was out there. I tried to, you know, I'm only going to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You know, I'm only going to take so many pills and I'm only going to, you know, but I'm only going to drink so much. And of course that doesn't do anything and it's controlling us, which, you know, I didn't know that then. I do know now, like when I share about my parents and how I was raised and the mind games and the verbal and the physical and the spiritual abuse, I do know, I don't blame my parents for my life now. I don't blame for my life then. And, you know, when I came in the program, I learned, you know, that I'm responsible for my life. So anyway, I was with this guy for a few years. He was very abusive and it was a crazy time in my life. And one of the, you know, when I was a teenager was one of the times that I came close to death in some of the drugs that I did and just never thinking I was going to stop. I got pregnant when I was 17 and I was back and forth to my mother's house and to, back to his house, this man. And I knew I wasn't going to keep my baby. I knew I was going to give him up because I knew that I was always going to be an addict. I thought I minimized and I thought at the least I'm going to be an old lady sitting on a rocking chair, smoking a joint and drinking. You know, that would be the least. I'll be calmed down by then. But I knew I didn't want that life for him. I saw the kids when I was in my addiction, you know, the little kids around the coffee table, and there's cocaine and there's drugs and other drugs. And I was of enough sound mind to know that that was really wrong. And I didn't want that. So this man, I didn't think it was his baby. And I was terrified if it was, because I had broken up with him, and the insanity of my addiction was that I still lived in his house in his sister's room with her sister after I left him. And he had told me he had a vasectomy, so I did not think it was his baby. And I was terrified that it might be, because I suspected that he had two children of his own, and he was not a good man. And years later, he was in jail for rape and pedophilia with his own children, and then a stepdaughter. After he left me, he married someone else who had a child. So I suspected that in my addiction, when I was high, I thought he was like that, and I was terrified that my baby, you know, if it was his, I was so scared. So I gave up my son for adoption, and I was, you know, 17 years old, like I said, and it was, you know, the hardest thing I ever did. But in retrospect, because I was high all the time. And I wasn't allowed to give him up for adoption for a year. He had to be in foster care, which was the hardest thing to deal with. He wasn't with the family. And I got to visit him, and I would visit him, and I would visit him, and I was high. It didn't, you know, I didn't stop. And that was the insanity of my disease. So I finally got away from that guy. And, you know, the insanity wasn't as bad. But, you know, I used drugs from when I was about 14 to, you know, I found another guy to be with who was about 12 years older than me. And things were not, you know, he didn't physically hurt me. He didn't verbally hurt me. And it was like, you know, that was the way I thought I would live my life forever, doing drugs and drinking. And, but the biggest part of me, I was hurting inside. Like my soul was hurt. My soul was broken. My heart was broken. I was physically, you know, bad off, unhealthy, and I was very sad, and I was in a lot of pain, and it was mostly, you know, in my heart. I was just so in pain, and I tried other ways before I came in this program, before I knew about the program. I tried other ways to get some relief from my pain. Like I borrowed this big book from the library called Pain. And I never read it. I went to therapy when I was getting high and tried to get better that way. I went to a church. I was raised in a certain religion, and we got out of that religion, and we just, my mom, we just went to a Christian church, and I tried that, and sometimes things got a little better, but I never stopped using. I never stopped, you know, and I didn't like drinking so much, I would say, but the first thing I ever did was drink, and the last thing I ever did was drink. And I always consider myself, you know, I used the drink to wash the drugs down, but it was all, I did mostly everything when I was out there, and I did have some fun. I had good times. But mostly I was just trying to cover up my pain from my life. And trying not to feel my feelings, trying to mute myself, and nothing worked. And I had a friend that I used to drink with, a boyfriend of mine, and he got sober. He went to the other fellowship and he told me about it. Now, he was a lot older than me too. He was 12 years older than me. And he really drank a lot and did drugs. But, you know, I surrounded myself with people that were worse than me, in my opinion. You know, I wasn't understanding yet anything like that. And, you know, he was bad off. He was DTs and all. So he got sober, and he was my first introduction to a program, seeing him. And what was really good about what he did, he never told me I had a problem. He never told me, you should get help. He just showed me by his lifestyle and how he was not the same, that, you know, through that is how he showed me the way you should, you know, just through experience. And I, when he first told me he was in the program, I blew pot smoke in his face. He always liked to remind me of that years later, because I did not know how sick that was to do something like that. Like, I was trying to tempt him, like the devil, you know, just trying to tempt him. So the guy I went out with, who I talked about when I was 19, he was 32. And we broke up all the time because I knew I was never going to stay with him. And he brought me into the rooms when I was 24 years old. And he wanted to show me what it was doing for him. And I went, and I thought I went to support him to see. I didn't know anything about it at all. And if I had to walk into these rooms alone by myself, I don't know if I would have got there. But it was sort of like I was tricked into coming here, because I went to see how he was doing, and I never left. He picked up right in front of me one time at a restaurant and drank in front of me, but I stayed. I never stopped. That was 1988. And for me, it was a good excuse, because I didn't want to, you know, him drinking was like, I didn't plan on living with him or marrying him. Although he'd asked me when I was 19, I didn't plan on a life with him. I knew that wasn't going to happen. So it was a good excuse when he picked up for me to say, I got to go. I can't be around people. I can't have a relationship with someone, an active alcoholic, an addict. He's definitely an addict. And, you know, it's like one thing my father taught me was about alcoholism. He hated alcoholics, you know, and so I hated it too. Because although he was very abusive, I was close to him on the other hand when he wasn't, you know. So I came in here when I was 24, and I didn't do everything right. I certainly did not do, you know, it everything right. But what I did do was I sat down and I listened to some of the people, what they were saying. I sat down and I shut up and I listened. I kept my mouth shut and I listened. I was very, very shy. I was very quiet. I'd had nothing to say. And when I went in there and I saw someone sitting up front, I'm like, I could sit here, but I'll never go up there. That's not happening that I would ever speak. That was terrifying to me. Like, I was very quiet and meek. And then I ended up speaking. At 6 months, somebody asked me to speak, and I was taught that you don't say no, you know, and I was taught that I was taught commitment and responsibility in these meetings. You know, I was growing up in these meetings, and I was able to do it. But it was the first time I willingly raised my hand in a meeting. I had a year clean before I did that. And the funny thing, what I've been going to these meetings, the same meetings for 3 years, and it was the first time I raised my hand and I got called on, and you could have heard a pin drop, because I'd never spoken, and everybody just, I guess they couldn't believe it. It was funny, because it was not my nature. I'd go into a meeting, I'd go in the bathroom at break time, and I'd leave afterwards. And I tried to avoid talking to people. And then when I had about 3 years of doing that, I started going to other meetings, and I met some women in the program, and I started having a good time, and I started having fun. I finally went to a Saturday night meeting, because when I was first clean, I was like, I'm not going to meeting on a Saturday night. I mean, that's not cool, you know? And so when I started going, I had met girlfriends and we went out dancing and we had fun. It was a clean club we went to where there was no alcohol served. It was run by somebody in the program, and it was a great time. And when I had 5 years clean, I moved to California, and I have a sister that lives out there. And first thing I did the first week there was get to a meeting right away. And I met a great bunch of people. My goal was to, like, you know, I'm going to get myself a California boyfriend and I'm going to move, you know, out there and I'm going to have a good time. And that's what I did. But actually he wasn't from California. It was funny, but he was from Ohio, the state next to mine, but he was living out there for so long. You know, and I started going to music and blues festivals, and I started hanging out with friends and going to restaurants where they played music. And at first it freaked me out because they served alcohol the first time I went. And I was like, but because I was with a group of people that were in the program, like everyone was like, it's okay. And that really helped me, you know, and I had a great time. You know, when people think that if you're new and you think you can't have any fun in recovery, you know, I had a lot of fun that I actually remember in recovery, you know, going to meetings, going to conventions out there. My first convention is when I lived in California and I went to a convention in Anaheim. I went to the beach meetings. I'm, you know, actually, you know, coming out of my shell and learning how to be, you know, a productive member of society. I went to college out there and I had a great time when I was living out there with a group of people that I'm still friends with today, some of them. I did come back home to Pennsylvania. I had almost 5 years of living there, and I came back to Pennsylvania. And when I had 11 years clean, I got pregnant again with a guy. My boyfriend is in the program. And that's when I really started growing up and I started changing for the better. Is when I had my second son, my first son who I gave up for adoption. He was a male also. And, you know, the program's what gave me the ability to learn how to be responsible, to learn how to be emotionally intelligent. Because when I was out there, you know, I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. You know, I stole so I could eat. I stole clothes so I'd have something to wear. I was a sneaky, from a young kid, I was a sneaky kid, sneaking around, trying to figure, listening to people's conversations, and then later, you know, turned into being sneaky so I could have my needs met and steal what I needed to steal. So when I came into program, you know, all how I coped with things didn't change overnight. You know, I had a girlfriend when I was in between sponsors and I was working my steps. And when I didn't have a sponsor, I used a girlfriend like to do my four step with a friend in the program. And if you're new, you know, to me, the answers are in the steps. Working the steps is the most important part, in my opinion, of this program. But coming to meetings, you know, I'm grateful for everybody being here, or we couldn't have a meeting. I can't do this without you. You know, you can do it without me, but I can't do it without you. So I'm really grateful today that I'm not the person I used to be. When I came in the rooms, I was a very wounded child, you know, and I was in a lot of pain, and I was not like, I wasn't an adult. I wasn't who I wanted to be. So I had my son, and then he was diagnosed with in the autism spectrum. And about 3 years, when he was about three, I met my future husband, and I got married to my husband. And And I was very upset that my son, you know, was in the autism spectrum. But I share about it because I'm grateful to God that I'm in this program, that I'm able to, I was able to take care of him. I was able to go to therapies and take him to his groups, take him to his sports. And he was in like a special needs groups for sports and all these things. My husband, him working allowed me to go out and take care of my son. And having my son was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was the happiest I ever was to have him after giving up my first son for adoption, and it really devastated me. But I was numb when I did it. So, it's taken years and years to have those feelings, because when I was giving him up for adoption, the first one, I wasn't feeling those feelings because I was so high. And then I had my second son, and, and I got married, and about 6 months into my marriage, my husband, tried to kill me. And turns out he has a mental condition that I didn't know about. And so I was pretty devastated when he tried to kill me. He was choking me, and he said he should have finished it. He got up off me and he said he should have finished it, but luckily he didn't. I was also abused by the guy, the guy I first lived with. He was very physically abusive to me a few times. So when my husband did that, I was going to leave him. And then I said, you have this condition, you have a disease. And I told him what it was. And I said, he got counseling, he got medication, he got therapy, and I stayed with him. And he had a condition that he was up and down. His personality was up and down all the time. But so it was a roller coaster, but he never did that again. And I'm grateful to God, So all the time I'm in the program, I'm working my steps, and it was difficult with my husband because, I didn't feel like leaving my son with him. It wasn't his biological son. And it was scary because he had a temper, but he did never never physically hurt my son. But my program wasn't that strong in those days, but I had a meeting. I had one meeting a week at least that I'd go to when we moved out of the area that we usually lived in. And then I started going to other meetings. I found a girlfriend, and we would go to meetings all over this county, Lancaster, Chester County. So I've always been able to eventually, meet people and get a bond with a couple of women and start going to the meetings and working in steps and sponsoring people. And if you're new, I don't know, some people, they don't know what a sponsor is sometimes when they first come in, and a sponsor is somebody that works, that helps you with the steps. But that's what we know a sponsor to be. That's all they do. They help you with the steps. If you get extra, if you get a friend, if you get someone, the sponsor takes you to meetings or helps you in other ways or invites you over to their house, yeah, that's extra. That's an extra benefit of someone who wants that kind of relationship. But what a sponsor is designed to help you with is to help you do the steps, because we're not supposed to do that alone. And so I left my husband and I'm remarried. And the funny thing is, back in my addiction, when my husband and I were first together, we got married in 2020, but we've been together for 8 years. But in my addiction as a teenager, he just remembered this. When we were first getting together, he remembers that he saw me and we got high together in a park in the town that I grew up in. And I have no recollection of this. I cannot remember at all getting high with him. I take his word for it, because he was telling me, he knew it was me. So turns around and I finally, met this man who's in the program also now. And I'm so grateful to God. My life is better than I ever thought it was going to be. Well, and 11 years ago, when my mother was dying, I was able to take care of her. She had a stroke and she had to come live with us after being in many doctors and hospitals. And she came to live with me. And she had had a mini stroke after having a big stroke. I got on my knees in the bedroom where she was laying in her bed. And I said, you know, if you do go, can you show me a sign if you do pass away? Because I didn't want to think about her passing away. But I said, can you send me a sign? And she said, I'll try. And she died about a month later, April. She died in April. And my first son, who I had given up for adoption, found me. And I found him in the beginning, at the end of August of that year. And my son was 29 years old when he found me. He found me the same year, a few months after my mother died, after I asked her, can you show me a sign? And I do believe that that was my mother showing me the sign that you know, she's up there and she was actually, you know, in my opinion, helping God. And I met my son and it was like a huge wave of relief and, you know, it just disappeared, you know. The first day I met him at a restaurant and I stood up when I saw him coming because I found out what he looked like through the internet and I knew it was him and I stood up and said, I love you. And he said, I love you. And I sat in the restaurant and I cried for an hour telling him what a mess I was and why I had given him up. And that was 11 years ago. And he has a mother and a father who are still alive. And he has family and cousins. And I've been a part of his life. I've been, you know, I've been in his life and been to his house and been to parties and been to dinners. And he's welcomed me into his house with his family. And that is a gift of this program that I don't go there under the influence of anything, that I got to meet him sober, that I wasn't sitting there in a restaurant drunk or something crazy, or, you know, high like I would have been if I wasn't in this program when I had to meet him. And I'm ever so grateful that I have that get one of the many gifts of the program. But, and I didn't even fathom meeting him in one way, but, you know, I do believe that that was a gift from God that my mother facilitated when she got up there, because he had, from when he was 18, to find me. Legally, he could find me then, and he didn't find me until after her passing at 29 years old. And now he's going to be 40 this year, end of this month, which is mind blowing. I want to say that, you know, the program has given me my life back, and, you know, I'm able to finally be a productive member of society by everything that it's taught me from, you know, surviving things that I survived, almost dying a couple times, almost getting killed a couple times. You know, I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. I was medicating myself and I was, you know, playing God with the drugs, trying to, you know, not die. All that insanity was no way. I really didn't want to live that way. You know, when I got sick and tired of it, you know, I walked in that meeting for my boyfriend, and I had been sick and tired of it for quite a while, and coming in there and finally, you know, getting one day was a gift that I don't take for granted now. You know, I have friends in the program. We have fire pit meetings at our house. You know, we have people over you know, newcomers and our friends and invite people over for our get-togethers, you know, going to conventions and going traveling. It's all kinds of things that, you know, being of service to me, I think it's very important. If you're new, being of service, just, you know, mean like cleaning up the chairs at a meeting, to speaking up front, to cleaning up the books. You know, there's all different ways to being a, what they call here, GSR, or, you know, the officers, all those things. There's so many ways to be of service, making coffee, you know. And I did that when I first came in. I gave rides to people that I'm still friends with, you know, when I was first around. It was 1988 when I went in. And to think that how long ago that was, and that I still know these people, and they're, you know, a lot of them are still alive. When I had my 30 years, my second husband's son overdosed and died on my 30-year anniversary. And he was a beautiful soul, and he was a beautiful person. And when I met him, I mean, I knew he wasn't going to make it. That's the thing. Like, I thought he wasn't going to make it. And I don't usually think like that. I don't think about other people's like that, but it was kind of apparent. He was trying the program, but, you know, this program isn't for everybody. It's for who, you know, but if you want it, it's here. You know, a lot of people need it, but a lot of people don't get it. And, you know, through the years, I've been to a lot of funerals. People dying outside the program, and now it's coming to the pan that people are dying clean. You know, I have a couple, even ex-boyfriends that died already, but they died clean. They didn't overdose. But, you know, this disease is out there. And when I see people come in the rooms, I'm grateful to God for the newcomers that share their pain, because it's like, that's what's out there. It's still out there. It's not any better. In my opinion, it's actually worse. The things that are out there, the synthetic things, you know, more addictive than ever. That's what's waiting for me if I ever choose to not be in this program. And for today, you know, I'm going to be in this program. I have a choice today. You know, I'm of sound mind today. Like I said, I have a relationship with God. And if you're new and you know, if you're afraid of that word God, all you need to do at first is get something that's bigger than you. And things like the room is bigger than you. The room of people in the program is bigger than you. If you don't believe in God, you know, he believes in you. And you just got to keep coming back. And it's, you know, it's not a religious program, thank God. You know, it's a spiritual program. Now, well, the other thing I'm grateful for in this program is that these are all suggestions and there's no rules, because if there was rules, you know, I wouldn't be sitting here if there was rules. I am not one for the rules. You know, like I have cousins that went in the military, and people tell me sometimes they think, well, you seem like you're in the military. And no, I don't know why I seem like that, but I'm not one to, you know, be told the direction I'm going to go in. And I was really, when I came in, I wasn't following the rules, if there was any. I wasn't following a lot of suggestions. But the one thing I did do is I kept coming back. The one thing, another thing I did do was finally start working the steps, you know. And the thing I did was I sat down and I shut up and I listened. And that was because of my, in my opinion, it was because of the way I was raised and the religion I used to be in and the schools I used to go to, that I was a good student and I behaved, except when you weren't looking. I was sneaky. I was a sneaky kid and I was a sneaky adult, you know, and like that didn't change like right when I came in the program. I mean, I was in my 20s. Well, you know, the one thing I didn't do was pick up, and I have everybody here that's in the program, you know, I have that to them to thank for. You know, where would we be if we didn't have this each other? I think this program is amazing, and what it's created, it, you know, the way it was created with the suggestions, and the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using, you know, and doing these steps in order, for anybody new in there, the steps are in order for a reason. They are in perfect order, in my opinion. Luckily, I wasn't in charge of putting them in order, but, you know, the people that put these steps, you know, it's in order the way they are, you know, it's genius. And I think, like I said, having a God in my life, I give God all the glory. It's by God's grace that I'm here. It's by God's grace that I'm not laying in the gutter, you know, from one of my blackouts, you know, laying down, throwing up after coming out of the bar. You know, it's by God's grace that the drugs I did didn't kill me. It's by God's grace that the people I hung out with didn't kill me. You know, I did everything from hitchhiking to going down and traveling just in my city of Philadelphia by myself under the influence of drugs, and traveling my public transportation and going to get drugs. That's all God's grace that I didn't, you know, get killed. And I have a purpose today. I have many purposes, and one was to raise my son, you know, and I never was so happy as when I had my son. And now he graduated from college. He has a job, you know, he's a productive member of society too. And my other purpose is to, you know, send a message to anybody that wants it, you know, coming into meetings and sharing my story, sharing my message to help someone else. Cause, you know, it definitely helps me to be sitting here. You know, it's an honor to be asked to speak at a meeting, let alone your meeting, you know, far, far away from me. You know, that's a beautiful thing that we can do this the way it is now. I'm going to meetings in person again. Now that this pandemic they got going on is not as strict as it used to be, and I'm grateful for that. You know, I don't think that there's any parallel one addict helping another. There's nothing like it. There's nothing close to it, but one addict helping another. And, you know, that's what it's about for me. And if you're new, I'd say keep coming back, you know, get another day, call somebody up, use the phone. You know, these phones are for so many damn things, but it's like the bottom line is phones for calling people on the phone before you pick up, you know, calling people when you run a ride, asking for help, because your ego can kill you. You know, ego, in my opinion, stands for easing God out. You know, when I let my ego in charge of my life, you know, it's not pretty. It's not pretty. I don't want that to be in charge, because that's me making choices when I try to give it up and work that third step and give it up to God and let him be in control. You know, that's something that taught me, you know, today I'm not a liar. I'm not a thief. I'm not a cheat. Today, I don't have to do that. Today, I'm not in pain. I'm not in physical pain. I'm not in mental pain. You know, my soul is intact. Today, I know both my sons are healthy and, you know, living a good life. I have a great husband who loves me, and I love him. And that's a lot of gifts, and that's just some of them, you know, and it's all because I kept coming back. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Elaine. Yeah, now the meeting is open and a member can share in either in Danish or English. Mødet er åben. Tak for mig.